Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is lead analyst Logan Motoshami to talk about the latest inflation data and what it means for mortgage rates. I want to say thank you to our podcast sponsor, Vesta, for making this episode possible. Logan, welcome back to the podcast.
It is wonderful to be here. What a crazy morning. It's CPI day, and the entire world is losing their minds because of 0.1% beat or hotter than inflation data. Like I was laughing because when I saw the reaction, it's one thing the market reaction, bond traders are offsides, that's fine. But literally, it felt like the entire world is hanging on the threads on how people answer the rent question for the BLS because the shelter inflation data once again came in. The aggregate total data actually came in flat. That's a really big deal. But the OER rents kind of went up again. So we're probably going to be stuck in this back and forth until this kind of settles out because we all know there's disinflationary factors in rent. But man, the market reaction and the market player reaction on today was so funny. I literally not only spit up my coffee, but I just had a fun fest watching people like react to this tiny, tiny little miss on estimates.
So I think this is the confusing part, but if you're in the mortgage business, please translate this for I'm an LO or I'm a realtor, right? So if you're in the housing industry is what I should say. Does this mean we have fewer rate cuts this year? Does this mean
Yes.
okay.
Yes, it is. Right now, for the first time in a while, and I try to do this on my Instagram stories to give people kind of live videos because I can't visually put the charts here while I talk. But the 2-year yield is more critical if we're talking about rate hikes or cuts. And the 2-year yield, if it gets above 4.74%, is starting to take the rate cuts out of the equation. So as of today, the 2-year yield was the story. It went up 20 basis points. So the market pricing for that is that one rate cut is gone now. Now, this thing moves like crazy. I mean, early in the year, it was pricing in 6 rate cuts where the Fed tried to push it back. But as of now, today's pricing, follow the 2-year yield, keep it very simple. If it's above 4.74%, you're one of the rate cuts are already gone. If it heads back up to like 5.25%, all the rate cuts are gone. So right now, I would say that today's pricing early on has taken the third rate cut out of the equation.
Ah, oh, that's so discouraging. If you're in housing and you're just hoping for some good news here, but so from your perspective,
There is good news. There is good news. I'm waiting to see how the spreads react. Of course, by this time this podcast comes out, it'll be Thursday. But one of the things I've been trying to harp on is that because the 10-year yield has gone up so much, mortgage rate pricing today compared to where it was last year, we would be above 0.5% higher today if we had the spreads of last year. So last year I talked about, the big mortgage story of the year was the spreads got really bad. The banking crisis actually impacted housing because it sent the spreads higher. This year, the spreads have been getting better. If that continues, it mitigates the damage of higher bond yields going out. So it'll be interesting for me. We're doing this very early on Wednesday morning to see how this spreads. But I mean, the mortgage-backed security, everything should get hit today because the market reaction was strong on this one. But the spreads being better this year has really benefited the entire housing markets because we would be talking about, are we closer to 8% rates today rather than kind of in the low sevens?
Well, I mean, that is good news. Glad to hear that. So how do you think the Fed interprets this very tiny move?
So the interesting aspect is that the Fed doesn't even use CPI inflation. Before the report came on, there's a gentleman named Ernie. He actually used to work for the White House, and he was showing a chart about there's a big gap between the PCE inflation and the CPI inflation. The Federal Reserve follows personal consumption expenditures, and that's still running with a two handle on the 12 months. So when they talk about rate cuts, they're really moving off of that. The CPI inflation has a historical gap now between the PCE and CPI. So that's why this data line doesn't really push them more than PCE. If PCE inflation was running at 3.8% core and 3.5% headline, that's a different equation. That's where CPI data is. But right now, the PCE inflation is still 12-month has a two handle on. So if people are confused, because, you know, I'm not a Fed pivot person, but I have to explain why the Fed is talking about rate cuts. Well, the growth rate of their main inflationary data has gone down faster than they thought. So this is why they were talking about rate cuts, and they don't want to keep things too restrictive and then be forced to cut rates more faster if the labor market breaks. Again, I'm all paper, rock, scissors, labor over inflation. So to me, a more concrete reaction will eventually happen with the PCE inflation that comes out a little bit later, and the PPI inflation that will be out this morning when this podcast, that filters itself into the PCE data.
Those are a lot of acronyms. I'm just going to tell you.
I know. It's one of these. It's one of these things. The CPIs, PPI, and PCE. But just remember, the 2% target that the Fed talks about, it's not CPI inflation, it's PCE inflation. There's still mistakes being made that tracks that, because there's a huge difference. We're talking about 3.8% on the core, 3.5% headline. And you got to remember CPI inflation, which I still think this confuses people. We had lower mortgage rates and lower bond yields with hotter inflation data. Still today, if you go back and look at it, you could see that when we were running at 9% CPI inflation, bond yields and mortgage rates were lower. Now, of course, the year-over-year inflation data has come down so much, but bond yields and mortgage rates are higher now. So we've had a reverse gap. That's the chart that I like to show you. One of the things we're doing a lot this year on the presentation is try to think about forward. And again, if the spreads stay good or get better, I don't think people understand how positive that is going out in the future, because that was such a big deal. And again, if we just had normal spreads today, we're 1% lower in mortgage rates today. So we're talking a difference between low sixes versus low 7%.
So what do you mean then when you say that we have taken out one rate cut if the Fed isn't tracking this data? So I don't understand the disconnect.
Well, the bond market, yeah, the bond market can go crazy. Like the Fed never talked about 6 or 7 rate cuts. The bond market did. So the bond market also thought we were going into a recession after the banking crisis. So it shot the 2-year yield lower. So you could get market pricing to be very extreme to the up or downside. But as of today, if this sticks, there's only 2 rate cuts to be priced in. Things change. You know, 6 weeks later from now, it could be much different, either up or down. But the 2-year yield is notorious for going with headlines and what's current right now. And then it kind of adjusts to the reality. And that's the thing that happened last year, was when the banking crisis came, boy, everyone was in the Fed pivot camp recession. The Fed's got to cut rates at least 1.5% this year. And that completely changed over time. So short term, you can get some very volatile moves up or down on the 2-year yield. And we saw that earlier this year when the 2-year yield was pricing in like six rate cuts, and the Fed never talked about that. So that's when I talk about today's action. The 2-year yield went up 20 basis points. It's well above 4.74. That to me means the market, the 2-year yield, has now taken one rate cut out of the equation.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, so I'm still confused. So let's talk like I'm 5 right here. So what you're not saying is that the Fed might stop, like they've decided anything on this. What you're saying is when you say it's priced into the market, I don't understand that.
Well, the bond market moves daily. What the Fed does at meetings is different. So what occurred earlier this year is that the two-year yield went down so much that it was pricing in 6 rate cuts. And the Fed was like, no, we never talked about 6 rate cuts. The bond market, again, thought the economic data was getting weaker than it was. And then it corrected itself. Now, the two-year yield is taking 1 rate cut out of the equation. And that's just the market, bond market pricing. It doesn't necessarily move 100% to what the Federal Reserve wants. The Federal Reserve's job is to try to manage that and kind of guide it to where they think. So as of today, today's pricing, the market only has 2 rate cuts for the rest of the year. If the two-year yield goes up to 5.25, they're taking all the rate cuts out of the equation. So you want to kind of keep an eye on that.
Okay. But if I'm a mortgage lender, And I hear you say that.
If you're a mortgage lender, you're going to have to learn how the two-year yield and a 10-year yield works. That's the thing. So we don't believe in dumbing down things because none of us are 5 years old. We need to talk about it in this. The two-year yield, everyone should have a 10-year yield chart and a two-year yield chart. The two-year yield, if it's above 4.74, think about that. Okay, the third rate cut is being taken out. If it goes higher, more rate cuts are being taken out of the equation. That's how you should look at it. And just think of it. It's bond market. It's algorithm. It's computer trading. It's not the Federal Reserve, but the market moves like crazy on this. It could, like we said, it was pricing 6 rate cuts. The Fed never even talked about that. And now it's talking about only 2 rate cuts. So we'll see how the data goes. And this is why we have to track every single economic data, not just inflation data, labor data, retail sales, everything. It all moves on this really big enchilada of market pricing, right? And it could be off short term, but over the long run, it finds an equilibrium to where the Fed kind of wants it to go.
Okay, so none of us are 5 years old, but many of us do not have any time for that. That is why we have you, Logan Motoshami, to watch it all for us 24/7 and filter it to what we need, which is tell me like I'm 5 sometimes.
Okay, so right now, today, the market is taking one of the rate cuts.
Now I understand.
Go get your milk and cookies, and we're good on that one.
Listen, I will not back off of that. Like, you are the expert on this, and that's why I have to press you, because it's like, you know, when you say that, I'm like, well, what does that really mean? So I'm always going to be that person.
That's why we try to keep the answers very simple. It just, right now, the market has priced one of the rate cuts off the equation. So if the two-year yield keeps on going higher, there's more rate cuts taken out of the forecast. That's just the bond market pricing. What the Federal Reserve does, or how they talk about it, is a little bit different. And a good example is the Fed tried to talk up the two-year yield the last few months about, hey, listen, I don't know where the 6 rate cuts or anything like that happened. So, and this is the volatility of the bond market. And a great example was last year. Last year, when the banking crisis, the two-year yield collapsed. And again, for all of you, if you really want to nerd out, because we need to draw pictures, because five-year-olds like to draw pictures, I visually show the charts tied to the economic events. And I think that's easier for people to understand, that the two-year yield can be very, very volatile in the short term, especially coming off of events. And that last year was crazy, the Silicon Valley banking crisis. People thought, oh, the Fed has to pivot. You know, the whole Gandalf line. Remember the whole Gandalf line? It was like, I don't think the 10-year yields are going to break underneath because the labor market is breaking. I try to keep it as simple that here, just volatility to the bond market, two-year yields move with rate cuts, 10-year yields more with mortgage rates. The spreads are getting better. So as long as that continues, the damage on higher 10-year yields is mitigated to a degree. For loan officers, right? That, I think, is more important, is keep an eye on the spreads. In fact, we're actually going to start to do that for the tracker article, is that we're going to show the spreads data every single week so people could get kind of a visual of what we're talking about. Because last year, this was a huge negative for housing, for everybody in the mortgage and real estate. The spreads got worse. I think that concept, that discussion is very foreign to people, because people are like, what the hell is a mortgage spread? My job is to basically visually show this in the chart. So we'll be doing that as part of the tracker from now on. Because if this continues, it's a positive for housing, even though the 10-year yield has gone up, even though rates have gone up. At least for now, it mitigates some of the damage of higher bond yields.
So to remind our listeners, that Tracker article comes out every Saturday. It's chock full of information you can't get anywhere else. We talk about the inventory that moves on the week. Like, we know what has been added, what is currently out there. We know what percentage of houses took a rate cut before they sold. I mean, a price cut before they sold. We know all sorts of things. So that'll be even more interesting to add another data point there.
PCE comes out at the later of the year, but one thing about the inventory data, blame the bunny, right? Active inventory fell, new listings data fell, pending contracts fell, purchase application data was negative week to week. It was down 23%. Blame the Easter bunny, because like always, when you're dealing with weekly data, a holiday can really screw things up. Okay, so inventory falling and new listings data falling, that has nothing to do with supply and demand economics. It's literally just the Easter bunny. And this is why I never count the last 3 weeks of the year or the first week of the new year in purchase application, because of Christmas and New Year's Eve, my God. So this was a very noticeable impact. And last year, Easter was, I believe, a week ahead. So the data gets really screwy around kind of a holiday. It also happens with, when school starts as well. So there are things that can move the weekly data. So just chalk up the last decline in inventory to the Easter bunny.
Yes. And, you know, Easter is a wild card because it changes. It's not like, oh, it's always, you know, December 25th, you know, like Christmas is, so we can, you know, we have week over week. So comparing it to last year screws it up because Easter wasn't on the same week last year, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And sometimes some holidays have minor impacts. Easter, I wouldn't consider like Christmas or New Year's, but it deviated from the trend. So the story is still the same. Inventory is growing year over year, still too slow for my taste. New listings data is growing year over year, still slightly slower than I thought. It's a very, very stable kind of inventory year. Active inventory is still far from being normal, but we are seeing year over year growth. We are seeing more sellers in the market, more sellers meaning more buyers. If this was a job loss recession, that's a different variable, because you could say some of these people are selling their homes because they can't afford their mortgage. But for now, it really is kind of a slow, methodical year. So we want to find inflection points into the data line. Now, if mortgage rates are getting above 7.25, that's my kind of line in the sand. We should be able to get active inventory to grow at least 11 to 17,000 per week. That has not happened. Didn't happen last year, even with mortgage rates going toward 8%. But this year, the one variable that's different is new listings data is growing. So for all the people that said new listings data can never grow because mortgage rate lockdown, and that nobody is ever going to list their...
That's not what I ever said, by the way.
Oh, sorry, Sarah.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Okay, so I think one of the things that surprised me about the tracker this week is we are up, like you said, it's not as much as we need, but we're up 100,000 homes over this time last year on the inventory. I mean, of course, in our giant population of 330 million people or something, that's not a lot, but considering, I mean, we'll take it.
Okay, so, and one thing about this is that the year-over-year data last year, inventory didn't bottom out to like April 14th or 16th. So the seasonal bottom happened in the longest time ever recorded in history. And just remember, when the end of 2022 happened, mortgage rates started to go lower, rates fell, demand picked up, inventory went. It's amazing how supply and demand economics works. So because of that forward-looking mortgage demand, remember, the inventory channels work much differently with mortgage demand, because that first-time home buyer comes in, takes a house off, they don't give you one. That created inventory to slow down and find the seasonal bottom at the longest time ever. And then as rates started to go up, the inventory growth really picked up toward the end of the year. So we're going to have the year-over-year comps are starting, will get easier after kind of April 16th. And toward the end of the year, it gets harder because we saw inventory grow all the way out toward the end of the year. So the year-over-year comps are going to be a little bit easy to beat. But then as the second half of the year, you're going to get harder year-over-year comps coming in.
Still, it's a positive to have 100,000 more homes.
No, it's a positive. And again, Mike and I, we look at this a little bit differently, but we've seen in the data for many, many years is that inventory tends to grow with higher rates. It does not grow with lower rates. Demand can pick up, right? This is why we always like to fight the mortgage rate lockdown. We don't see anything in the data for like a very long time, like 14 years, to show that lower rates bring out more inventory. So rates are higher this year. Purchase application data has pretty much been negative year over year the entire time. So that makes sense for inventory to grow. What I say about my levels aren't being hit is that I expected a little bit more on the new listing side. Not there. And we're talking about a tad, like, you know, 8 to 11,000, somewhere around there on the growth level. So it's nothing too drastic, but I expected a little bit more. But we'll see if the inventory growth picks up now with a little bit more higher rates into the equation. And we track this. This is why last year, you know, the tracker was very useful in the sense that when mortgage rates were going to 8%, didn't really change the variable too much in the extreme. And I think that might have shocked people if people were tracking the year-over-year price cut percentages were actually always in decline, even with rates at 8%. So this is different now because not only is active inventory growing, new listings growing. So supply and demand equilibrium works, right? More supply, less demand, price cut percentages should grow. And it has grown. And the percentage is growing. And the question is, you know, we should be able to surpass the 2023 levels. The question is, how close do we get to 2022 levels? And we'll take it one week at a time. But at least now with the tracker article, everyone kind of sees the macroeconomic dynamics that go. Mike does a really good job with all of his inventory data. I try to bring the economics factor into it and 10-year yield and mortgage rates. And this is why the spreads to me is the positive story. As long as that sticks, that'll be good, because down the line, if the spreads start to get better by themselves, you don't need the 10-year yield to go down much. But if the spreads start to get better and then the 10-year yield goes down, there's your very near 6% mortgage rates. It's easier to get there. And then there's your sub 6% mortgage rates. But, you know, I kind of have that line in the sand about 380 until the economic data gets weaker. So we didn't break that this time around. And yields are much higher. I think the last time I saw the 10-year yields at 450.
Okay, well, a big week and more to come. We'll talk to you again in a couple days. And also, I mean, you write up all these reports, you give us the analysis so that people can see exactly what you're talking about. Listeners, look for those, because this is Inflation Week. We've got more coming.
And always remember, since 2022, paper, rock, scissors. I'm not a Fed pivot, not because of inflation, but this rock, the labor market, is what the Fed really cares about. And with the recent statements by Powell and everyone else, I think that's becoming more apparent now that they're verbally saying, you know, they're tracking jobless claims and you know, they'll change, you know, when Powell said, we'll change our mind if the labor market's breaking. Oh yeah, by the way, we follow jobless claims data. So now that they finally verbally said it on TV, I think more people can be on the same page like we are.
It's a good page. Thank you so much, Logan. We will talk to you again in a couple of days.
Thank you. And I hope every five-year-old understands where the two-year yield is now.
Listen, you can hate on that, but I'm telling you, I'm going to ask because I know there are people out there going, what does that mean?
When I say the two-year yield, 4.74, up higher rate, you know, we try to keep it. Again, I think it's easier if people see me say it with a chart, because when I show, you know, how the market reacts to different periods, it's easier. I think verbally just saying it it might not get, but oh, if I had my charts behind me and everything, I could do that. I used to have a chalkboard here.
Oh yeah.
I used to have a white chalkboard and do equations and everything. And then sometimes I take it out and draw, but the old high school basketball coach in me never dies.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go eat some cookies, which by the way, I love. So, you know, no hate there. You can tell me milk and cookies all day and I'll be like, yes, I love it. All right. We'll talk to you.
I know you will. I know you love milk and cookies.
Okay. Bye. Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.